Happy Christmas from Radio Arian. Have a pro-white Christmas and a diversity-free new year. And remember, a kebab is not just for Christmas.
TWO Radio.
You're listening to Radio Arian at RadioArian.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 8th of December, 2017. You're listening to me, Sir Longshanks. I am hoping that I have with me Mr. Dennis Wise, producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. I just lost connection with him and I'm hoping we've got him back on now. Dennis, are you there and how are you doing today?
I'm here. I don't think it's a great line, right? But yeah, we lost contact for a second or two then.
I don't know what happened there. I did think we weren't actually connected to the server at first, but I think we must be because nobody's saying we aren't in the chat room there. So hopefully we are connected. Hopefully people can hear us. Yes, Anglo Falcon is saying yes, it sounds good. Well, we've got we've got lots to go into this week. Quite a variety of things and subjects to go into. We've got comments to go into that were left on the last episode of the Secret Masonic Victory of World War II, your new documentary series, Dennis. And I guess we should get straight into it with the first one. And this is from Maverick Kana V1. And he says, sometimes I really want Britishers to suffer just a half of what they have given to the world. And I think that's, I think that's something that a lot of people feel. But I do know, and I'll pass this over to you in a minute, Dennis, but I do know that in America, people think, well, they blame the British. They think that the British are responsible for the banking, the City of London. And I know that here in Britain, a lot of people think America is responsible for it all. And America is directing the world and America is telling Britain what to do. And they just wish that America would stop interfering with us. And I think it's the Jews that are behind this, and they would like us to fall out like this. They would like white people to think the Brits are the bad guys. They'd like the Brits to think America are the bad guys. We're taught that the Germans are the bad guys here in Britain. We're told that it's Angela Merkel behind it all. She's the one behind the EU, and it's not. It's the Jews behind it, and that's just my first thought on it. But I'll pass it over to you, Dennis. What do you think of this? People feeling that they really want the British people to suffer over what we've done to
I can understand it to an extent, because I can tell you for sure that the feeling after World War II from Europe, from what I learned, was never trust the English. And obviously that comes from Blueberg, when Churchill had him sent back to Stalin, and other countries handed over to Stalin, like Poland. So at that time they would have looked at it not as possibly Jewish but as an English decision. I think the misunderstanding about America is that America is the military wing of the Illuminati, if you like, you know, the City of London, and so it looks visibly when America go into a country that it is America. But the bankers in America, that all stems from the City of London anyway, so they don't really do anything. We have that order.
I think another side of this as well is that the people involved that were doing this, I mean, we're talking about your episode with the Boer War, a lot of the people that were involved in it, they were just trying to do their best for Britain. They thought, well, we've got to win this war. We want to make as much profit as we can for our Queen and for our country, and by any means necessary. And I think this carried on into the Second World War, because the next question is linked to this, it's basically a statement, and it says the Brits are good at war. And the British people did win the Second World War, even though it was by really disgusting means. It was dishonourable, firebombing and all the rest of it, and firing at civilian targets. I mean, it was dreadful, but they did win the war, and that was how they justified it. That was how Bomber Harris justified it to himself, was that we want to win this war. So if this is what it takes, we'll win the war and then it's done. The war is over because we've won it. So they were prepared to do these dirty tricks in order to win. But the motive behind it was to win the war and get it over and done with. And the motive behind the Boers, what happened out there in South Africa, and also with the British Empire, was to make as much as they could for Britain, for the Queen. There was a like a nationalist drive behind it. The problem was that with Germany, we weren't seeing the fact that the Germans are our brothers and we're part of the same race, and the same with the Boers. And with the British Empire, a lot of that was serving the Jews and serving materialism. So I think we need to add that to it as well. But what are your thoughts on that, Dennis?
Yeah, well, I mean, my thoughts are easily explained by the fact that, you know, nobody tries to help the English as much as I can by presenting videos to warn them of how they've been duped, and not just the English, I mean the French and everybody else who thought they won World War II are now looking around, especially in the capitals, and they've just seen Somalia. So it isn't that, I mean, I understand that they were duped in World War II, even when they were given the order, they had to follow it through, even though the Germans didn't have that at Nuremberg. They were classed as criminals. But I can understand how they've been duped. It's such a web of, a spider's web of lies that, you know, it takes even me, you know, years to unravel. But at the end of the day, I know, you know, English people, I know the working class never actually benefited from from the empire. Everything went to the upper class. And so, you know, I've got, a sympathy for them in a way, which is why I do these videos, and I do try and, you know, spread the word that have they been overtaken and dominated.
Well, I think the British people are good at heart, and I think you can see that by the propaganda that's used to get British people to go to war. And we're always relentless. Told it, yeah, it's these other people are being persecuted. It's look at Assad, he's killing his own people. Look at Gaddafi, he's killing his own people.
Yep.
It's never, well, let's go over there and take what they've got because we want more. It's always emotional blackmail against us. And then we end up being used for it. And your documentaries show the ways that we're lied to and what the real truth is behind this. And why everything is the way we are is because we fought against the good guy in World War II, basically.
He was trying to save Europe. When I watch any footage now of World War II, for instance, the D-Day landings, you know, I look at that as these British soldiers are fighting now for London to turn Muslim, but they don't know it.
And it was so dishonourable just to continue the war after that. Got to be one of the most dishonourable things that ever happened in the last century was to continue fighting. At the point, I mean, I say this so many times, but Hitler had Winston Churchill and all those men at his mercy, and he was gracious and he gave mercy to Britain and allowed all the troops make their way back to Britain. And how did Winston Churchill repay him? I mean, Churchill was at the point when you're having a battle and the victor wins, the vanquished either has to accept slavery or fall on his sword. And that was the point that Churchill and the troops were at. He either had to accept slavery or accept that the troops would all be killed. And instead, Hitler was gracious and said, well, you can go back. Why should we have any more bloodshed? Is pretty much what he was saying. I don't want to kill the British troops.
Yeah, it's true as that.
It's so sad.
Can I just say what annoys me is when they show the scenes when they come out of Buckingham Palace and in 1945 and everybody's celebrating this great victory with a totally 100% white audience, and yet the royal family and Churchill are up there on the balcony, and they're obviously thinking totally different to what the people below cheering are thinking.
Oh, it's a completely hollow victory. And when the royals look out of the windows now, it's just a sea of black faces. Black faces in the royal family as well.
Well, that really is, in my eyes, they're just kind of saying, like, look, you know, it's over for you white people. That really does send a message.
Oh, definitely, definitely. The next point is to do with the royal family as well. This is from Robert Mason. Dennis, are you going to highlight Christian King Edward VIII getting overthrown by finance and replaced with his Masonic younger brother, with Wallace Simpson being used as a pawn? This was another one of Churchill's wonderful deeds. Do you want to relay the story of what happened there for listeners that might not be aware of it?
Yeah, I mean, I do get asked to do quite a number of things, and my general answer is I don't even really know what I'm going to be doing myself the next episode, as I've explained too many times. I just get a surge of inspiration on something, something catches my eye, and off I go. But in this particular case, I watched an episode which was banned in England a while back. I managed to get it through a proxy, and it showed King Edward actually just as popular as what Lady Di was. He would visit Wales, for instance, and then somebody on the doorstep would welcome him into the house. He'd go in the house, notice there was nothing in the fridge. She'd just offered him a cup of tea, and he was disgusted at this fact and tried to do something about it when he got back to London. Whereas before, you know, or after this particular royal family, the Kudinov, I can't think of the original name now, but they're not Windsors anyway. We're all for this elite society and didn't care much about the working class, where he seemed to. And Lady Di had that touch as well, to an extent. So, yeah, he was removed, obviously, because he had it made it quite obvious that he was happy with Adolf Hitler, so that wasn't going to be put up with. And they did use the excuse of his wife-to-be as, the kind of blackened her, so the British public would accept him being removed, which is a major thing in English society, for the king to be stepped down and abdicate. He also was against a lot of things in the royal family, like hunting, for instance. I know when he went up into Scotland, like they have a clock up in Scotland, one of the castles that stay there, and it actually runs over time so they can keep the hunting going for another half an hour. And he put the clock back and said, enough's enough.
No, he was definitely a good man. He spoke up for the British people. So what they basically did, they put a honey trap in front of him. And they put this woman in front of him for him to fall in love with. And the woman was an American divorcee. And because she was an American divorcee, he was told, you cannot possibly marry this woman if you wish to remain a royal. You have to abdicate and stop being king if you want to marry someone who's divorced. And he did, and he stepped down because he loved the woman so much. And now, if you fast forward to today, and you've got Prince Harry, who is supposedly related to this royal, and he thinks nothing of saying, I'm going to marry this divorcee, and she's black. And nobody says anything about it. Yeah, and Jewish as well, from what I hear. And nobody says anything about it. Nobody has brought this fact up, that how he is desecrating his ancestor's memory by doing that, when his ancestor would rather abdicate the crown than smear the royal family by marrying a divorcee. And yet Harry is not only going to marry a divorcee and smear the royal family by doing that and desecrate it, but he's also going to marry a Negro Jewish divorcee, which is basically pissing all over would-be King Edward's grave, I think. Christian King Edward VIII is just being pissed all over by Harry. By him doing that.
Like I said, it does send a message loud and clear.
It sends a message that he has no respect whatsoever for tradition, no respect for his ancestors, no respect for Britain. And, you know, I mean, it seems to me that it's a Jewish trait that he has. I think he's Jewish. I think Lady Di had Jewish blood.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
And it's certainly coming out in him now. But yeah.
But it's not just him, because the royal family itself has accepted that he's going to marry her as well, because I know Prince Charles did a comment on it, as presumably the Queen has. So, you know, they all accept it. But like I said, it just throws me back to 1945 and what they were really thinking.
Did you cover that in Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told? I think you did, didn't you? Mention it, the King?
I went into the race mixing of Europe, and I did show Churchill on the balcony with everybody else there with the... I think I might have gone into it more in the Communism by the Back Door, to be honest.
I'm just wondering, I've seen it in one of your documentaries that you mentioned about the king and the honey trap and how he had to step down. I may be getting it mixed up, but yeah, it's something that everybody should know, really. It's part of the history of Britain, the royal history. It's a very important subject, and yet it's glossed over, and obviously Harry doesn't want people to remember it.
Obviously, yeah.
The next one we have is from Barney Winner, and he says, with the current news about Prince Harry and his half-black girlfriend, am I right in thinking, in simplistic terms, that Lucifer is the god of diversity and Yahweh is the god of nationalism? And I would say yes to that, and I know that it will take a little bit of explanation because some
people... Yeah, that's all I heard to you.
Yeah, some people think Yahweh is the god of the Jews, but Yahweh isn't the god of the Jews. Yahweh is just the Hebrew word for the god of the Old Testament. And the Jews themselves managed to censor the word out of our Bibles and managed to get the word Lord put in place of the word Yahweh. And the Jews are forbidden from pronouncing the word Yahweh, and it doesn't appear in their Talmud. You won't hear them say it anywhere. And yet we're told in the Old Testament that we're supposed to pronounce his name and we're supposed to praise his name. And it just seems to me more evidence that the Jews are nothing to do with the people of the Old Testament. In actual fact, they are bastards, and every bastard is not allowed to use their father's name because they're illegitimate. And the Jews are illegitimate. They pretend to be the people of the Old Testament, and they're not. So they're not allowed to use that word Yahweh. And yes, the God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament is a nationalist. God created the nations. It says that he defined their boundaries and their times. It says that the afterlife, we will be in our nations with our kings. And the whole Bible is talking about nations. When it says love your neighbor as yourself, it means love the neighbor in your nation. When it's talking about a stranger and you're supposed to look after the stranger, it means a stranger of your same nation or a stranger of your same race. And that's quite clear when you look at the context. But it is quite a common mistake to think that Yahweh is the God of the Jews, and he's clearly not the God of the Jews. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Dennis.
Well, it's simply that in the Bible, you know, this diversity is not looked on well. I mean, obviously with the destruction of Babylon, when he cleared everybody out to wander the earth, and it all comes to pass eventually. I mean, obviously the people who do believe in Lucifer, like the Freemasons, believe in diversity and not nationalism, and vice versa.
Well, yeah, you've got Babylon that gets destroyed because that's diversity. And what was the reason why God brought a flood upon the earth? Whether you think that's a myth or whether you think it really happened, the reasoning for it was that the sons of God mated with the daughters of man. So there's interbreeding of some kind. Whoever you think those two peoples were, the sons of God and the daughters of man, they shouldn't have been interbreeding together. It was the interbreeding together that brought all the evil upon the earth. And straight away after the flood, Tower of Babel, and the languages have to be confused to stop everyone mixing together. And that Tower of Babylon is basically the prototype for the EU and what they're doing today. And right the way through, it says you have to be a peculiar people. You need to be separate from the other nations, and don't mix with them. If you mix with them, you'll end up interbreeding with them, and you'll end up taking on their customs, and you'll lose everything that you have. And sure enough, that is exactly what's happening to us now. Now, Europe is being flooded with these foreign races, and everything is being taken away from us and given to them.
Well, I suppose in a line, you could say that nothing strong has ever come from dilution.
Well, that's it. I mean, this is where the word adultery comes from. Adulteration. To commit adultery, it means to adulterate something. What is it you're adulterating? Well, you're adulterating your blood, adulterating your race, if you fornicate with a strange woman. This is why it says, thou shalt not adulterate twice in the Ten Commandments, because one bit is talking about not adulterating the race, and the other bit is talking about not coveting your neighbor's wife. I mean, I could go on. All these laws that the Hebrews are given, don't put dairy and meat together, don't wear two different types of clothing, don't yoke together an ox and an ass, don't sow the field with two different kinds of seed. Every one of them is pointing to the fact that God hates diversity and he likes things to be kept separate. And if you don't keep them separate, they will mix together and create an abomination. And Lucifer is the god of the abominations, and Lucifer is the god of materialism. And I mean, we've gone into this so many times, Dennis, how our enemies worship Lucifer, they worship materialism, and illumination and the enlightenment and all of that. So you've got God on one side, Yahweh, the Christian God, and on the other side, you've got the God of materialism, Lucifer, Freemasons, and the Jews. And Christ himself said that the Jews were the sons of the devil. Did your father is the devil. He's the master of lies, a murderer from the beginning, because the truth is not in him. There's truth against lies. It's light against darkness. And Lucifer represents a false light. This is why I say the black sun is a Christian symbol, because Lucifer represents a false light, and that represents materialism and everything you can see. And Christ is the light that you can't see, that illuminates the soul, that gives us life. You know, the sun can't bring anything back to life, but Christ can, the black sun. I must cough a minute.
It's okay.
Oh, I get a really dry throat talking here. Right, what was the next one? The next one is linked to this as well, and this is from the Greater Thought. And he says, Dennis, what do you know about Jesus being a Jew or Gentile? And I'll pass that over to you first, and then I'll answer it.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, one of the great lies of the Bible is that Jesus is actually a Jew when he's actually not a Jew. And I think Mr. Friedman explains this very well in a presentation on the internet as well. He goes into great detail to say that Jesus was from Galilee and he was Judean, which is totally different than being a Jew. In fact, Jesus spoke against the Jews. And it's a fallacy to say that he was one. And even when he was crucified, when they say that they put above his head the king of the Jews, didn't actually say that. When it was totally mistranslated, what Pontius Pilate actually said was that the king of Judea. And so again, there's another twist as well. But I'm sure if people look into it and you know, look into researching it all, they'll find out, just like Hitler thought as well, that Jesus wasn't a Jew.
Yeah, he said that he was Aryan by his actions. Benjamin Friedman's quite right there. I mean, Jesus was from Galilee, and that was the area that the Benjaminites, or the Benjamites, moved to after they came back from Babylon, and the tribe of Judah moved back from Babylon, and only a tiny percentage, only 10% of the tribe of Judah came back from Babylon, and that tribe of Judah is only about 10% of all the Israelites. So really, it's only 1% of the Israelites came back from Babylon, went to Jerusalem, and about 200 years before Christ, this remnant of the tribe of Judah went to war with the people next door, these Edomians that were Canaanites, and they ended up saying, either we'll kill you, or you can accept being circumcised, and we'll all be called Judeans together. And these Edomians said, yes, okay, we'll do that. And I was reading the other day in Flavius Josephus, and he said, at this time, God stopped speaking to the Israelites. And the high priest used to have this breastplate with gems on it, and the gems would, something would happen to them, which would indicate whether God was what he was saying, basically. And God stopped speaking to them at this time. And this is the time that they started interbreeding with these Canaanites. And we're told that Jesus is from the house of David. He's from a pure line. But the Pharisees and King Herod and a lot of the high priesthood at the time of Christ was mixed in with these Edomians. They'd been part of the Judean people for the last 200 years. Plus, the Judeans also said anyone can become a Judean. We'll call them proselytes of the gate or proselytes of justice. So you had Arabs moving in there. You had all sorts of people moving into Judea. It was a multicultural center. And the Judahites, the tribe of Judah that didn't want any part of this, moved away, and they were called the Essenes, and they kept to the strict racial purity laws. But the ones that didn't stayed in Jerusalem. And then you've got Jesus, who was born of the house of David, so he wasn't a Jew. He wasn't a Judean, because he wasn't a citizen of Judea. He didn't follow the Pharisees' religion, so you couldn't call him a Judean because of that. You couldn't call him it because of blood. Modern-day Jews follow rabbinic Judaism. That didn't exist for another 300, 400 years. So he wasn't anything to do with it. And this is why he was calling them the sons of the devil, and why they were persecuting him as well. So this is, you know, this is a common misconception today. People will think that Jesus is a Jew.
Especially pagans.
Yeah, yeah. And it's completely wrong, because the modern-day Jews are descended from these Canaanite peoples that then left Judea and mixed in with the Khazarians in Khazaria, and then moved into Europe and mixed in with the Europeans. That originally it was these Idumean Canaanites, because the tribe of Judah that weren't mixed, they became Christian. They left Jerusalem. And they ended up being refugees in Britain and France and elsewhere. And the troublemakers, the Pharisees and the Idumeans and the Arabs, they were all in Jerusalem and they revolted 70 years after Christ. And that's when the Romans just destroyed the place, destroyed the temple and the priesthood. And then you got a new religion, which is rabbinic Judaism, which is what today's Jews follow. So, you know, it's quite complex, but you can see it all in history. And it's also borne out on Wikipedia. You can check out the Wikipedia page for Idumea, and it tells you that these Idumeans became a part of Judea 200 years before Christ. And it tells you the parentage of these Idumeans, and it tells you two Canaanite women. And the Canaanites are the enemies throughout the Old Testament. So they're called Canaanites in the Old Testament, and they're called Jews in the New Testament. And once you know that, you can see the continuation from what it says in the Old Testament. You must wipe out these Canaanites, exterminate a lot of them. If you don't, there'll be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your side, and they'll take everything you own. And the Israelites didn't destroy them. They got all humanitarian over them and thought, we'll just get tribute from them and we'll allow them to live. You can read through the Old Testament, and because they did that, this is why everything kept messing up for them. And the same thing today. It's the same story today. We've allowed the Jews into our countries. They've taken over everything. They're now running the government. And the whole of Europe and America and Australia, the whole of the white world is now like Judea was in the time of Christ, where the actual indigenous white people are right at the bottom of society. And we've got these Jews at the top, and they're flooding the place with others and saying, oh, yeah, they're just the same as us. There's no difference. It's only a skin colour. And it's exactly the same thing. It's fascinating once you realise that.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, without the Gentile welcoming these wandering Jews into their countries, you know, the Jew would really have a real hard time last 2,000 years. But we did, and, you know, we do what we do best with hospitality, and that's how we get rewarded.
Well, that's another fascinating thing, is the word Gentile, because it never, ever meant non-Jew. It just meant nations. And there are prophecies in the Old Testament where it talks about nations. And the word is goy, which then got Latinized to Gentiles. And it's talking about the Israelites. And it says, two nations are within your stomach, within your belly. And that's supposed to be Isaac and Esau. And it says two goyim are within your tummy. And when it says nations and kings will come from you to Abraham, it's saying Gentiles and kings will come from you. So throughout the Old Testament, it uses the same Hebrew word for the Israelites, Gentiles, nations, that became the word Gentiles in the New Testament. And then the Jews, when we were translating it into English, the Jews said, oh, Gentiles means non-Jew. Means non-Israelite, which is a complete lie. And again, that confuses it all, because whenever you see the word Gentiles, you think it means non-Israelite, but it could very well mean Israelite nation. The nations that were the Israelites doesn't mean non-Jew at all. That's a modern interpretation of it that confuses everything. And Galilee was called Galilee of the Gentiles, meaning Galilee of the nations, meaning Galilee of the Israelite nations, because there were various nations that were descended from the Israelites. See, all of this is, once we allowed the Jews to interfere with our translating of the Bible into English, we basically gave it to the devil on a plate to interfere with it. That's and right. To tell us what to put in it. And this is why we get to the stage that we're at today. It's
confused. Yeah. Stuff.
Yeah. Once you learn it, it suddenly all makes sense. It really does. Next one, Ostwind. He says, I think Hitler was a crypto-mason. Hitler's rise to power, 1933. Mein Kampf was released in the color orange 33. Look it up. You all know what 33 means as well. What do you think of that, Dennis?
It's funny, I just downloaded a copy of Mein Kampf from 1941, which is believed to be untouched. So that makes interesting reading. But yeah, Hitler, a crypto mason. Well, I think I've found enough evidence on the internet to disprove that he didn't, him and Mussolini and Franco had a dislike for Freemasons, because they knew with the psychopathic thought of what is good is now bad and what is bad is now good, it will bring the world to, you know, a place they don't really want to go. And when he's coming with these colour of orange 33, I mean, you know, maybe there is something in the number 33, but I really don't see Hitler being a lover of Freemasons, especially with what you know about and what I've learned as well researching the secret mystery. Really doesn't really have any effect on me at all what he's saying, because actions speak louder than words, and the people who won World War II are where we are today, the reason why we are today. And Hitler did all he could to stop it. Was unfortunately, the rest of the Christian world was brainwashed enough to think he was a demon. And the solution really was to win World War II.
Well, I don't think colours, I'm not sure they even had numbers for colours back then, like we do today with HTML and colours that you use on a computer, they all have numbers, but I don't think they did back then. And I think this is an example of a bit of a tenuous link. Now, I think people have to be careful that they don't see conspiracies everywhere. Just because Hitler's using, or the colour orange was used on the cover of Mein Kampf, doesn't mean that he's a Freemason. You know, we don't want to be wearing tin hats. I don't think, you know, we just need to be careful and discerning in what we're looking at.
Well, I don't think you can look at what he's saying or even photographs, because photographs can be obviously, you know, manoeuvred with Photoshop. You've just got to look at their actions, because that is the defining line of a person. And once you see the action of a person and what he does, then there is no going back, because, you know, what Hitler did, and there's no denying. But what he said and what, you know, what a photograph may seem to produce is irrelevant, really. The bottom line is the action.
Actions always speak louder than words.
Exactly.
Next one from Cascadian Applications. He says, the swastika is a symbol of the sun. Rightward arms are supposed to symbolise evil. Red, white and black are lodge occult colours. The Haken Cruz is in a sun. The high-ranking National Socialists are implicated in Thule and Vril society. And in SS castles, occult imagery can be found. Masonic symbolism is used in SS oath ceremony. Hitler tried to overthrow a government and only got a year. We all know that doesn't just happen. So there's a few things there to explain. Do you want to tackle some of them and then I'll have a go at it, Dennis?
Well, I think some people kind of claim the swastika as the India cult as their own, which, you know, the swastika is obviously, it's a worldwide phenomenon going back years. I truly believe that when he put the swastika in there, it was from a Christian angle. He wanted something to frighten, you know, the communists with. They didn't have any such flag like the communists had. And it certainly had that effect when he finished with it. As far as what we talk, I don't think it asked about the Thule and the Vril Society, et cetera, and said that Hitler was a member. When Hitler took over the National Socialists, it didn't last 5 minutes. And he actually said that there's no room in National Socialism for these kind of organisations. But still, people think he was an occultist.
Yeah, the swastika has been used for thousands of years. It's always been a white man's symbol. And it doesn't matter which way round the arms are supposed to be going. That doesn't matter. Counterclockwise is the natural way that the Earth rotates, but clockwise is the way that all our clocks go. So it doesn't really matter which way it's going. I guess in India, maybe they think that if it turns one way, it means something, because you've also got the mirror image of it. It says that it's a symbol of the sun, but I think it's more a symbol of the black sun. It's it's moving. It's like traveling from the center to the outside of the circle, and at the same time, it's moving around in other directions.
Yeah.
Like a spiral. It's like life itself.
I looked at it as a good luck symbol to some organisations. I mean, the Boy Scouts used to have it as a good luck symbol in the UK.
And it was in the church. I mean, that's where Hitler would have seen it.
Saw it, yeah.
It was in the church. And he says red, white and black are lodge occult colours, but they're also the colours of the church, red, white, and black. There's symbolism. And in your documentary, Dennis, you showed that Hitler was trying to find a flag that was like the communist one, and it grabbed people's eyes. And the swastika does grab your eyes. Red, white, and black are colours that look good together. They stand out, which is what he wanted. That Thule and Vril society, I think that was before National Socialism. As you say, it didn't really exist once it was going. And this occult imagery in the SS castle, I guess he's talking about the Black Sun. But even the temple of Jerusalem, that had the signs of the zodiac in it. And throughout the Old Testament, you can find the signs of the zodiac. And I'm guessing that in the SS castle, they might have had the signs of the zodiac and the Black Sun. As I say, the Black Sun is a symbol to represent the light that we cannot see. And the Bible tells us that the light that we cannot see is Christ. And that's the only reference you'll find to that.
Well, I think the SS, there was 50% at least were Catholic. And so the other 50% must have been Protestant, because you've got to swear that I believe in Almighty God. So that kind of explains that one.
Well, yeah, and it says Masonic symbolism is used. A sword is used in Masonic symbolism, but that's also used for knighting people. And if they're going to have a ceremony, which is supposed to resemble the old knight ceremonies that we used to have, well, Masonic symbolism took its symbolism from those knight ceremonies. I don't think the SS were putting nooses around their necks and tying their shirt legs up. Do you know what I mean? And putting a hood over
them. Pretty sure they weren't. No, I think they were based on the Teutonic Knights. I know some people said they were based on the Catholic Church.
Knights Templar?
No, maybe? The first lot were actually Jewish, weren't they? The Society of Jesus. Can't remember them.
Jesuits. Jesuits.
Sorry. Yeah, Jesuits. That's it. Sorry, yeah. Some people think they were based on that. I was taught that it was based on the Teutonic Knights, which obviously fought for Christianity way back when the Muslims were invading in Europe.
Just to add an aside here, on The International Jew this week, which is read by Ted Midwood, the book by Henry Ford, it's a fantastic series I recommend people listen to. He had some quotes in that from these various high-up Jews that were saying that the Jesuits were run by the Jews and that the Jews started the Jesuits.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I'd heard that. I mean, this is Henry Ford that's quoting these people. And I think that pretty much destroys any idea of it being a Jesuit conspiracy behind it.
Can I just add about Henry Ford? I sometimes get the question asked, he funded Hitler, which he did. He got given 50,000 every birthday. But he was a Freemason. Well, yeah, he was a Freemason. He was a 33-degree Freemason. And I found out only the other week that not every 33-degree Mason knows anything about Freemasonry. It's, it's just awarded to him. It's not like a lifetime achievement in Freemasonry. It's just Freemasonry wants certain people to be aligned with them so they look good. And I'm pretty sure that Henry Ford didn't really understand, especially without the internet in them days, just what Freemasonry was.
Yeah, I think that's the same as with these universities that confer doctorates on people. They've never done any studying. They've never been at a university, but suddenly they are a doctor or an honorary professor because the university wants to be associated with them.
Well, most people think Freemasons are just harmless businessmen trying to link up, which is no doubt what Henry Ford would have thought, and him being a businessman, would have took the award.
Well, I think a lot of them are just normal businessmen. It's not all of them that do this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
They're relied upon to cover up for them, but they don't have any suspicion of what some of them are involved in. That's how it has this cover of being a charitable organization. If they were all wicked, evil devil worship,